This April, the small nonprofit is being sponsored by Troy Mailing. That's T-R-O-I Mailing. Friends, I've personally been using Troy's printing and mailing services for almost 5 years now. I choose them for my clients, and I chose them when I was in-house. They are great to work with, always get my brand colors right, are cost-effective, and get my mailouts to my donors on time, even during busy seasons. Call 1-866-876-4624 for a free $100 postage credit when you use promo code DONORDM1 on your next campaign. Thank you, Troy Mailing, for sponsoring the small nonprofit.
AI is one of those buzzwords that I feel like has really taken over a lot of mind space for people of late. You know, we think about artificial intelligence as this futuristic and exciting and scary time or opportunity, but a lot of times we don't really see how it impacts us or our work. And the cool thing is there's actually a lot of opportunity or things that ways, I guess, that AI is being brought into our sector and has a lot of opportunity to help organizations, let's say, leverage their data to do more focused work or understand and find opportunities that we might not have seen before. And really, if you think about AI or how this conversation is really talking about a way to filter or funnel your data to generate insights that will help you choose action or choose what action is most appropriate. So there's some really cool stuff in this conversation all about AI and fundraising in the nonprofit sector. So I'm really excited to dig in. My name is Cindy Wagman, and I'm your host of the Small Nonprofit Podcast, where we bring you practical and down-to-earth advice on how to get stuff done in your small organization. We know that you are going to change the world, so we're here to help. Today's guest is Najeed Qassam. He is the CEO and founder of Kela, an impact technology company dedicated to empowering nonprofits with accessible software. He's also the founder of Fundraising Kit, K-I-T, the world's leading AI-powered predictive analytics tool built exclusively for fundraisers and nonprofits. He is a lawyer by training and also the founder of public policy organizations Better Canada Initiative and Believe Vancouver. Definitely very multi-passionate. He has done a lot of amazing work in the sector. He's also a writer, author of the book High on Life, with a cool foreword written by former Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, and co-producer of the documentary Conversations for Change. There's a lot more I could say about Najeed, but this conversation really speaks for itself. I think there's a lot of interesting things we can start to look at within our sector on using AI. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Najeed to the podcast. Najeed, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited for this conversation. I feel like it's very forward thinking, or maybe it's catching up.
Maybe, but you know, I'm not throwing shade anywhere. But funny that I think at the office, my nickname is Old Man, and I'm like a curmudgeon. So to be talking about forward thinking things is ironic and also kind of, you know, validating.
Yeah, well, I think we could agree that as a sector, we're not quite the most digitally forward. And today we're going to be...
How about we have a lot of opportunity?
Lots of opportunity to leverage what other people have paved the way for us to do.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and today, specifically, we're going to be talking about AI. And I think most people have an inkling of an idea of what is AI? We think of it as, you know, Amazon recommendations, Netflix recommendations, which
is actually a pretty good understanding of what it is. Yeah.
Okay. I think most people have that understanding. And how it is emerging in our sector and how we can start to think about leveraging AI
for fundraising. So let's start with what is AI? Because just because I can throw out Netflix and Amazon doesn't mean I have, and certainly doesn't mean our listeners have a good understanding of what it is. So let's start there.
So I think what's really interesting about that question is sometimes we forget that the fluency that folks like yourself may have in something like AI isn't necessarily common knowledge. I mean, even the term AI is an acronym, which not everyone may know. AI stands for artificial intelligence, and it's not like the Matrix is taking over, so folks don't have to worry. But simply put, it's the intelligence or predictive capabilities demonstrated by computers, by machines. And unlike natural intelligence, which is displayed by humans and animals, which kind of has consciousness and emotional, it's an evolving decision-making framework, so to speak, that's built on more and more data. So think of it as like a technology that can take all these data points, processes, and ultimately make suggestions or recommendations. And so, you know, it's not going to take over the world. It's not going to be, you know, it's not super scary. It's also not, you know, it is based on what data is in, right? So it's not like you just say, here's data, go make decisions. No, there are software engineers and folks and that go in and say, you know, these are the inputs we think are useful. And then they train it on, you know, previous sets of data to check how effective it is. And I think what's really exciting about AI is it evolves, it gets better. So it becomes more accurate. It learns how to weigh things differently. And I'm not an engineer, I'm a lawyer, let's be clear, but that's kind of the way that I understand it.
Yeah. So like if we use the Netflix example, it's not like the machine is watching all the films and analyzing them for what you might like next.
No,
it's saying
it's not.
The people who like this film, like the more data we collect of like the people who have the same viewing patterns, they then go on to watch these things or those. So I'll put those in front of you.
And I think the term machine learning is like one that's also thrown around, and that's like where it takes data and it makes recommendations or predictions. And from those and the accuracy of those, it learns, okay, this is not as accurate. Cindy didn't watch Breaking Bad, as we suggested, or she did and she binge watched it. I'm not going to judge on that one. What I am going to know is that over time, those recommendations continue to get better. And a lot of it is around pattern recognition. A lot is around, you know, like you said before, somebody similar watched something. So maybe, you know, it's making predictions on that. It's not like it's following your eyes and your giggle every time you laugh at a show. It's not Terminator. Although I'd love to have
really cool.
Sitting in my computer being like, you should watch this.
No. Oh my God. Fun fact. My husband thinks my son looks like Sean Connor from the Terminator. He keeps bringing photos up.
Totally unrelated. Yeah, I kind of want to meet your son now, I'll be honest with you. Or maybe your husband, I can't tell yet. And I think what's exciting about AI that we kind of miss is like, it is just a tool. You know, ultimately, we can use it to help us automate mundane tasks, identify things that no human can possibly see, support fundraisers, which is what today is really about, in doing their job better. And I want to be clear right at the top of this podcast, nobody's coming for your jobs. You cannot. But so many folks are like, oh my God, we're going to fire the whole. No, you can't automate fundraising. That's not realistic. What you can do is allow folks to be less burnt out, allow them to prioritize more effectively, allow them to see patterns and focus their work in different ways because of the AI. Ultimately, effective use of artificial intelligence in fundraising is going to be because it's deployed appropriately. And then the fundraisers can take that knowledge and make decisions and steward better and build stronger relationships. And that I think is, that's a really, people are scared of that. It's just not that scary.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that. But I totally can appreciate that people, that it does feel like, I mean, there's increasing dialogue around, you know, the machines are coming for all of our jobs.
I'm happy to retire. You know, I'll go golfing. Like that, if they can come for my job, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that in the context of talking about universal income, right? But regardless, the other thing I hear, which I think is super relevant, a lot of small organizations feel overwhelmed by the idea of having a lot of donors because it's more information. They can't manage those relationships. They're like
on spreadsheets. You're right, by the way. Like, and that's the thing. Like, if you're on spreadsheets, if you're not using your CRM effectively, if you are ultimately, if it's just piles and piles like my desk of paper that you need to know, oh, I talked to Cindy on Thursday, I took notes, I didn't record them, but there's a sticky somewhere. Yeah, the more data you have, the more stressful it's going to be.
Yeah,
I think, and this is like, you know, I love this analogy because somebody told it to me really early in my career, because I'm not a technologist. There are two fountain pens sitting on my desk. Like, I'm an old, one of them was made in 1960. Okay. Like, I am, it is pretty cool, but you know, we're not trying to build a faster horse. We're trying to build a car. Right. And so if you try to build a faster horse, you're in trouble. You are in trouble, right? You're going to be, it's scary. It's uncontrolled. It's out of hand. But if you're trying to do something that's going to actually become more efficient and actually help the smaller orgs, you know, I believe it's actually the little orgs, the sub 5 million orgs that are going to benefit the most from AI, because they're going to see opportunities that they're missing and ultimately be able to leverage potential gifts much better. And I think, you know, it goes to unwillingness or a fear of the unknown, right? For so, and you said it kind of at the top of the podcast, you said, sometimes we've been a little laggard. And I think that's because we operate from a place of fear. And I think that as we transition generations, as Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Zs become more and more engaged in our sector, they're going to move forward whether the rest of us like it or not. And so I think that changes, the train's sort of coming. We can either get out of the way or get on it, is my assumption.
Yeah. And hopefully we can see how it can help us do better. So that's, I want to talk about that, the use case scenario. The other thing that I want to talk about is data in or data out is only as good as data in.
Yes, ma'am.
Pick your order. Is it helpful to understand how the data is being used before we understand that we have to have clean data, or vice versa?
I think it's like asking which came first, the chicken or the egg. It doesn't really matter. They're so both important. So let's talk about data in for a quick second. I mean, I'm gonna go back and like lean on my like legal background. The CRA requires us, for those of us that are Canadian registered charities, to have good data in. And because it affects our ability to receipt, it affects, you know, if we ever get audited, it protects the responsibility that we're given to steward being a charity ultimately, right? And that's a designation that it's hard to get and it's easy to lose, to be really honest. Now, you don't have good data in, you're in trouble. You need to know who your donors are, when they did, whether they were receipted, where the issue receipt was issued. You know, we all know all these things in Canada. In the US, it's not that different, right? If someone makes a gift, you still have to receipt it, you have to track all of that. I think what gets dangerous is when we think of data as only for those purposes, right? And so, you know, if we take the approach that we don't have time to clean up our data, to record it in our CRM, to have that discipline, it's not make work. And I think there's sometimes the assumption, especially from young technologists like me, who are like, oh, he's just, you know, that's what he does. No, it's because it has so many benefits, from compliance to ease of use to preparing for donor meetings, of course, and then to using it for reporting and analytics. I think that we need, you're absolutely right that it's only as good as the data comes in, but it's not that hard to have good data. You're not doing any algorithms. You're not doing math or pulling out your abacus. You're simply just having discipline. And I think that's sometimes that's a scary thing, but really even a spreadsheet can have great data quality, right? As long as you're disciplined about it. Does that answer your question? Kind of.
That does. And to bring that back to the AI piece, like, you're only going to get good prediction or like good recommendations.
Forget about AI. Yeah. Even reporting.
Oh yeah. I mean,
like, AI is a little scary, maybe, possibly. Yeah. Reporting is required. Your board needs to know how many donors you had last year, how many repeat donors, how many people are recurring. givers. Yeah. What was your donor lapse rate? Like, you can't do that unless you are disciplined. And I think, forget about AI, which we'll talk about, but to me, it's not like a no-brainer. Like, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be pejorative here. I just think it's important.
Yes.
It's important. And sometimes, and the misconception is, oh, it's taking too much time. It's not going to pay the dividends. The dividends are going to undoubtedly come from putting that time in, and it's a fraction of what it is relative to the return on that investment.
Yeah. And it's foundational to you getting the kinds of insights that we're going to talk about, right? You cannot generate any meaningful insights or look at opportunities unless you understand and have good
data. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So,
and I would tell everyone, use your donor management systems. It doesn't matter which one you have. You know, we always used to joke, the best CRM is the one you use.
Yes.
It doesn't matter the brand. It doesn't, of course it matters, but it doesn't matter ultimately, because if you are in love with it, if you are disciplined in it, the dividends are going to pay off so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And increasingly, like, your donors are often the ones entering their data into your system now, right? Like, with online giving and all that, as long as you have your form set up properly and you're using campaigns and things like all the, if you're setting it up, a lot of the work is actually done by your donors. So,
and again, goes back to like, spend the time. And when I mean spend the time, it's not like take a week and do it. It's like, just when you're setting things up, do it right. Cause it's going to save you hundreds of hours going forward, right?
Exactly. So back to AI.
There's a guy with about 80 sticky notes on his desk, by the way. Like, I want to call my own BS.
I started using a paper planner every day, and I still use my computer as the main one.
Yeah.
But every day I still need to look at things written by hand, I don't need to like carry for anyways. Yeah.
But that shouldn't be a combination. I agree with you on that. Yeah. Just don't make it your donor data.
No.
Yeah.
It's not going to serve you. Then there's, we could talk about institutional knowledge, which feels like a whole other conversation, but the more you put those things in your system, the better that institutional knowledge you build up.
And I'm just going to pick up on that for one second, because, you know, it's interesting. A lot of the folks that you work with and we work with are sort of like the smaller organizations. And sometimes those are led by these badass women who've been doing it for 25 years, and they just know. The problem is, at some point they're going to leave. And if you don't want the organization to fall apart, data can be a really foundational pillar for that institutional capacity. And instead of leaving a gigantic hole, which is make work, by the way,
make work
for the next executive director. And she's probably a young millennial who's going to spend a ton of time. You know, she's 37 or 42 or whatever it might be. And she's going to be like, spend so much time doing this garbage work that should have been done throughout the time. And she's going to lose a ton of that flavor, all the personal, all the that capacity.
Yeah, exactly.
And we haven't even started talking about predictions yet.
I know. So let's talk about it, because I'm so excited. And I think this is something that has so much potential, especially for small organizations who are overwhelmed by data, especially when it's done in an accessible way. So let's talk about how fundraising can leverage AI and some of the things that you are seeing that you're leading or others. I know you have some really good examples. So how can we, I'm going to preface this by saying, like, not all tools will do these things. But it's, I think, aspirational, and certainly some tools will do them. So let's get aspirational. What are the ways that you would like to see organizations leverage AI?
I'm going to go back to Netflix, because there's a reason, or Amazon. God, Amazon knows like more about me than I know about myself. Let's be honest. And I hate that. But, you know, all they're doing is they're using patterns from data that they've collected to help drive your decision making.
Yeah.
And are they influencing it? Yes. If you buy a baseball bat, it's probably going to suggest a ball, because millions of data points says the people who buy the bats are probably going to buy the balls. Now, it might seem so obvious to us, but you do that at scale. You can't do, you know, there's something there, right? And so to me, fundraising is a lot about patterns. It's about relationships and it's about patterns and the intersection of those two things, right? So, you know, let's use a really simple example. Every single person who gives, especially like what I'm going to call like non-one-off, not one-time, but one-off givers who just give to a peer-to-peer campaign. And, you know, that's like my uncle's sister's aunt, you know, asked me for $50 and I did it, right? Yeah. But if I actually have any relationship with the organization, if I'm on their mailing list, if I'm clicking links, if I'm reading something, if I've made donations over a few years, whatever it might be, that is all data in input that is sitting there that no one's ever going to go and dig for. It's not like I'm going to make up like a timeline by hand on a piece of paper and be like, Cindy did this and this and this and this and this. It's not realistic to do for $500 or $1,000 or $10,000. But that data tells a story. In the sales world, it's called purchase intent. It's called engagement intent. In the donor world, it's called stewardship and a donor funnel. Ultimately, that's what we're talking about here. So, you know, the secrets, the magic and all that is you can tell Cindy is probably going to give after she did X. Maybe it's opened an email, a newsletter, e-blast 15 times over the course of 6 months. Or maybe it's she gives every November because that's her jam. You know, she's a Giving Tuesday guilty giver. And you can see that multiple years of patterns and there's so let's get into some of those examples. So let's start with like my favorite one, donor readiness. To me, this is the coolest, most efficient prediction. And you know, we are really lucky to have worked on this one quite significantly. When somebody's ready to give, the data will tell you. That's super. It's not like I have a premonition. The sun is there and I put my finger in the air and it wind blew. I'm like, oh, Cindy's going to give. No, there are signals. There's that purchase intent, right? So, you know, AI can help you say there's a pretty good probability that Cindy is going to give in the next 2 weeks. Now that's really cool because you're not just going to sit there twiddling your hair. You're going to be like, I should probably call Cindy and be like, yo, Cindy, give me that money. Probably not like that though.
Don't do it that way.
Definitely not at all. Like if any of the boards I sat on had listened to my fundraising call, they'd all fire me. But no, but you know, that's what I'm saying. It's predicting the future, but it's not, it's guiding behavior. And that's what I kind of talked about before. If I can then, instead of cold calling 900 people on my list who I don't know may be interested, if the data is signaling something is possible or likely or has a high probability of happening, that helps me do my job better, right? Yeah. So that's a really great example. Let's use another one. How much money should I ask Cindy for? If you've given, got a new book out, got customers, this girl's got money to donate. Yeah, and so you look at giving patterns, you look at demographic data, you can look at things like job titles. There's so many things and you may be wrong, but you might be right. And it's, if the data is going to tell again, a story and it's not, you still have to think. It's like if the algo says, ask Cindy for $1 million, I'm like, she serves nonprofits, probably not right. But it's going to say, if you ask somebody for the smaller amount, you're often missing an opportunity. So you should at least see what the data is, right? Because they'll probably give you that smaller, right? Because that's what you asked for. But if the data is saying they could have the potential to give a little more than you might have assumed, right? Because of demographics, because of this, because of, again, that's where machine learning comes in. There's millions and millions of data points that help inform these algorithms. You might do better when you ask. So not only do you know that Cindy's likely to make a donation in the next couple of weeks, you've got a decent range of what you should ask her for. Okay, great. What's the next question? How should I talk to her? You know, what's the best way to reach out to somebody? Again, if you've been disciplined with your data, if you've recorded interactions and engagement with that person, if you know they're a heavy newsletter reader and they've emailed you before, or you know that there's a ton of phone calls in your previous stewardship, data will tell you something. It'll look at age. It'll look at you know, social media engagement and look and be like, probably be like, yo, Cindy's the kind of girl that's going to be respond to an email better than a phone call. So I should hit her up that way because I'm more likely to elicit a positive response, which is more likely to increase the gift, which is more likely to do better for the organization. So I've just used three examples of where predictive analytics can guide a fundraiser's behavior. It's not telling you what to do. It's simply guiding your decision-making. Does that kind of answer your question?
That's super helpful. So I have a question about data points. So Okay. Obviously, and I do want to, I mean, you might be able to answer this specifically about the tools that you've developed or your team has developed, but like, obviously we know that data into the system that we're responsible for, that our donors input themselves or that our interaction with the system, like, did they open an email? Did they click, et cetera? Do you pull in other data? I think a lot of organizations feel like, oh, we don't have data, right? We don't have a lot of information.
So I'll answer that question. But first, I'm going to say you actually do.
I know.
Because if you use MailChimp or, you know, whatever, every time Cindy clicks on an email, that's a data point that MailChimp is recording, whether you want them to or not, right? It's there. You can get access to that data. Every time a donation is made, every time a piece of mail is sent out, if you have 10,000 contacts in your base, you probably have a million data points.
Yeah. Wow.
If you add them all up, it's the amount, it's the campaign they gave to, it's the issue area that they care about, it's the time of day they made a donation. Mm. It's like, you don't think about those as individual data points. You do that. Forget about aggregated data. Forget about census data. Forget about all wealth screening data. Just in your database, you are rich with data. You just don't know it. And awesome. So the assumption that we don't have data is generally wrong. If your organization is 15 minutes old and you just got your charitable status, you probably don't have much data. And but you begin building that. But if you've been around for a few years, you've got data.
Awesome.
It's just so like the data my assumption is everyone has dance moves. You just don't always know it, right? Everyone has data. You just don't always know.
You've not met my husband. I would not qualify him as having dance moves. But
now the whole internet knows.
Now everyone knows. It's okay. He knows. I'm not shy about sharing that information.
So then the second question is like, how do you bring in more data?
Do we need to? And if so, where do we look for every
data scientist on my team says always.
Yes. Okay.
You need to know, but if you can, you should. How about that? And again, it goes back to like the number of tools that you use every day that are going to give you data. If you're using a ticketing tool, there's data there. If you're using an email marketing tool like MailChimp, there's data there. If you have a wealth screening tool like, you know, Windfall or Wealth Engine or Donor Search or whatever it might be, there's data there. You know, if somebody has social media, put their account there because you can do social following. And if they tag your organization or they retweet something you've done, that's data. The more of that you bring into the treasure trove, the richer you will be from a data perspective. And so do you need to? No, but should you? Because it's a missed opportunity if you don't. And great pieces of technology are going to help or mostly do it for you, to be honest. You kind of do it, and it'll kind of spit these kinds of things out.
Cool. We've covered a lot. I don't even know what time it is. we're running out of time. Are there any other uses before we get into where our listeners...
Ooh, I got a couple.
Okay. Two. Yeah, good.
One is forecasting. I think this is... So actually, I want to go back, but before I talk about forecasting, I think one of the biggest missed opportunities as a fundraiser is moving folks from one time to recurring donors. To me, this is the Willy Wonka golden egg of predictive analytics. That's how old I am. All the young people who listen, I'm like, who the hell is Willy Wonka?
There's new Willy Wonkas.
Oh, is there? Okay.
There's isn't there?
I don't know.
Johnny Depp do Willy Wonka? Anyways, we're talking about Gene Wilder?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gene Wilder, like way back, right? Yeah. Okay, anyway. So there is a Gene Wilder of metrics. We're going to go with that. And that's, to me, the one time to recurring. I think because for so many orgs and every thought leader in space talks about predictable revenue for fundraising organizations. And there is a study, I think NextAfter did it, that found that your donor lifetime value is not inconsequential multiple more if you can get somebody even on a $10 or $20 a month, you know, recurrent donation, right? So to me, my favorite one is that metric. Who is likely to become a recurring donor who's made a one-time gift or either a few one-time gifts or, you know, whatever it might be. To me, that's the mother of all ones. And the reason I brought that up is because that goes to the other use cases. There's two things I kind of want to talk about. One that's directly related to AI and one that looks at the efficacy of all of us that we should be thinking about in the context of data. So to me, forecasting is the coolest one. Sales organizations have been doing this forever. How much money am I going to sell this year? You know, if I'm a tire salesman, I might probably have that based on, you know, and there's probably AI in there saying, oh, winter's coming. You're probably going to sell more. And there's all these kind of data points. If tire salesmen are using it, we should be using it. And there's nothing against tire salesmen, by the way. They take all my money all the time, right? Every time, every 4 years, new tires. But, you know, I think understanding that, because that can help us understand our programming realities. It can understand whether we're on track for where we want to be. It can, there's so much there. And so artificial intelligence can help you. Sorry, go ahead, Cindy. Pardon me.
No, I was going to say, as long as you make the ask, I've worked with organizations where they'll just stop doing their year-end campaign and they wonder why there's no money coming in.
Ask people. Yeah. Well, and that goes back to what we were talking about. AI isn't going to solve that problem for you.
You still
drink
have
more
to do
coffee. That's going to solve the problem for you. You know, and I think, again, it goes back to a tool, right? So if you can say, but the really exciting part about forecasting is like, we are not on track this year. We better ask a lot, right? We need to push harder. We need to, you know, reallocate some of our resources. We need to get the ED and the board members dialing. Like, we need to maybe run a campaign. We need to put out a new peer-to-peer. You can make decisions when you have an idea of where you're going, right? And so that's a really cool and very innovative way to use artificial intelligence in fundraising. The other way isn't really about AI, but it's about measuring your efficacy. And that's, I really am a big fan of benchmarking. So a lot of folks in the sector, and it's not related directly to AI, but I bring it in because I really have this mission to get folks focused on thinking about how am I doing relative to my goals, relative to our sector, whether it's by cause area, like your NTE code or org size or your geographic location. You know, if 15, I know these are made up numbers, but if the benchmark for percentage of recurring gifts to one-time gifts is X, 18%. If I'm at 4, I should call Cindy, right? If I'm at 40, I should keep Cindy away because I'm doing better than the benchmark, right?
Yeah.
But knowing, being able to check yourself, being able to hold yourself as an organization and as a fundraiser accountable is really valuable, because then you can lean on all these data points and these predictive analytics and know where you really need to dig in and not. And so it's almost both the pre and the post, right? It's like what's going to inform how and what you use, and also how you're going to measure your efficacy gains. Does that make any sense?
That makes total sense. Yeah.
So I'm a really cool benchmark guy. I love benchmarking.
Yeah. I love that. All right. So Najeed, clearly not everyone is doing this work. You are. Where can our listeners learn more about you? And I mean, you have Kila, which we're very familiar with because we use with a lot of our clients, but you also have Kit, and that integrates with a lot of other CRMs. So tell us a little bit about piqued your curiosity.
Person. Yeah. Well, I'm a crazy person. So I've decided that instead of being stressed just about one tool, I decided I should have two, because, you know, having an 18-month-old baby isn't enough. So, you know, here's what I would say. Let's talk about the little folks first. You know, I'm really blessed to work at a company, a social business, a B Corp, that is really dedicated to empowering small nonprofits. And at the heart of our CRM thesis, and Kila is an incredible CRM, is data and analytics. It's got the power of predictive analytics in it. It uses incredible technology. It licenses technology from Kit, which I'll talk about in a second, to power small nonprofits. So if you're small and you're excited about this and you want to work it into your, you know, every day, and you're looking for a CRM, I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't saying, come check out Kila, talk to Cindy about Kila. But, you know, as I went down this journey of the last few years. We started using artificial intelligence and thinking about that for years at Kela. I realized that, you know, there is a huge market hole. There is, like, whether you're small or big, this is something that almost no organizations are adopting, and really every organization should. So I decided to be crazy and start a new adventure. And that's, we built this thing called Fundraising Kit. So if you go to fundraisingkit.com, it can talk to you all about some of the things that we've, you know, talked about. There's some great reading and resources just to learn about how we can use it. And Fundraising Kit, or Kit, we call it, is like a toolkit. That's why it's called that. It's a tool. It's an AI or a predictive analytics toolkit for nonprofits. It integrates into incredible tools like Salesforce and Razor's Edge and Neon and Wealth Engine and Windfall and Donor Search and MailChimp. And we really are like a repository and a space where we want to make data kind of the fluency of the sector up and be that driving force. So I'm really privileged to be able to have incredible teams working on both these projects. And ultimately, my goal is to make every nonprofit empowered by artificial intelligence in a not scary, not damaging, exciting way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much for being
part of the podcast.
I will shout out to your team as well, because they are awesome and we love working with them.
They are amazing.
And
they make me look good. I'm not that smart for all. A group of amazing women and men are much more intelligent than I am. So I'm very grateful for that.
They're awesome. And so are you. This was a great conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to our listeners. And this is so exciting. So I hope
that... And to be fundraising, folks, I know it's going to be gritty. Make that coffee. Do your thing. But we always get through it as a sector every year, and go ask for money.
Yeah. All right. We'll see everyone next week.
Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.